Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Sabbath. My daughter untied my shoe right before I came up here. Just thought I'd pass that on. A warm hello to those on the webcast today. Even remote, we're together. So I had an interesting occurrence recently. Our family recently bought a used car. And on a Friday, a few weeks ago, I was at the dealership. First thing, start the process. But the financing person wasn't in until later in the day. So my salesperson then went out of his way to tell me that the financing person was Jewish and that he didn't work Saturdays. That's not something you hear every day. I mean, it doesn't mean a ton, but it made me happier that I had chosen this dealership. You look for those little tiny things. And I know that most Jews don't understand the whole truth about the Sabbath, but when even maybe a veiled mind does God's law, it's significant and it's impacting to us. And that thing that set this person apart was the Saturday Sabbath. And when we purchased that car on Sunday, we met the financing person, took the opportunity to share that the salesperson told us, "You're Jewish and not working on Saturdays." We conveyed we also kept the Saturday Sabbath. Now, this was uncanny. This person sounded just like Dr. Levy. Like, I saw another person there, but the voice was Dr. Levy. The person's name was Isaac, and he kept saying, "Interesting," to these Christians who were observing the Sabbath. Now, it went a little further in discussion to the holy days, too. But when I heard this person observe the Sabbath, it made a huge impact in my mind. It was something that we'd have in common, a marker of a heritage and a belief system, the truth of God that's really like forgotten in this world, completely forgotten, considering it's in the Bible. There's nothing more differentiating and signaling as a person who observes the Sabbath. Especially Christians who observe the Sabbath, which is seen as a Jewish thing. Now, I've been listening to the History of the Church series by Mr. Doug Johnson. Whenever I can do that during chores, he often says that the best markers we look for in history are the Sabbath keepers. It's how we can be seen in history. The main thing that differentiates us from the rest of the world. Not all Sabbath keepers were at the true church, he would say, but the true church would be among the Sabbath keepers. So it struck me that day with the financing guy, a big piece of our belief system revolves around the fact that we keep the Sabbath. And that's totally by design, by God. So the topic for this split sermon is the Sabbath. Just as we're commanded to keep the yearly holy days every year, rehearsing the plan of God, there was also a command from God about the seventh day. It's fundamental to him, so integral to our weekly lives. And it encapsulates the entire plan of God, this entire plan of man's ultimate rest. It connects us to God every single week. And more than anything else, it's what's indicating that we belong to God in this world. It's the fourth commandment, and it's right before the honor your father and mother, which we're also doing this weekend. So here's where we're going to go today in this deep dive on the Sabbath topic. Some of this is just going to be a review of our fundamental belief, but we're going to see where God instituted the day, how it was observed through time. And the title is simply Keep the Sabbath. Keep the Sabbath. Now, all the while, as we read these scriptures, we can pull out principles for us today, things we already note as a review to observe the holy day, to observe the Sabbath day properly, principles that we'll pull out. Here's our church's fundamental belief. It kind of makes sure that our organization follows Jesus as much as we can. I'll quote it. "The seventh day of the week is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. And on this day, humans are commanded to rest from their labors and worship him, established and blessed by God at creation, the seventh day of the week. begins at sunset on Friday and continues until sunset on Saturday. The Sabbath is an identifying sign and perpetual covenant between God and his people. True Christians follow the example of Jesus Christ, the apostles, and the New Testament church in observing the seventh day Sabbath. Let's go to Genesis 2. In some respects, this is our most well-known belief in the church. But let's review where it comes from. And again, pull out those principles for how we observe it. Genesis 2, and let's read verses 2 and 3. Very familiar scripture, but even our little ones know this by heart, probably. Genesis 2, 2 through 3. And on the seventh day, God ended his work that he had done. He rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. He blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, or set it apart. Because of in it, he rested from all his work which God had created and made. Now in the creation, or here this recreation as we know, God accomplished his work in 6 days. That was done on purpose. It's not because he couldn't do it in one day, but just as many things have dual meaning in the Bible and in the plan of God, he purposely worked for 6 days. Then after the work was done, he rested on the seventh. He blessed it and sanctified it. This was all prior to Israel. I mean, this was when mankind was one day old. So what does it mean, blessed it and sanctified it? It was at this point, the weekly day received this permanent, everlasting, infinite blessing and sanctification. And it was set apart, not just for Israel, it was set apart for all human beings. God rested, made it a day of rest, as an example of what this seventh day for us and for all man would be like in the future. So many of God's commands for us are integral to his way of life, not just a formal law given on Mount Sinai. Like, think about it. Was murder a sin before the commandments? Well, think of Cain killing Abel and then that sin being referred to. Disobeying God was already sin before Sinai and the commandments of God in the Garden of Eden. So it leads to a question that we can ask ourselves. Was the Sabbath observed before Israel came to Mount Sinai and received those commandments? And the answer is very much yes. Just think about God blessing it and sanctifying it at the very beginning. And we also have an example in the Bible of Sabbath keeping. Let's go to Exodus 16. Here's an example when the manna began. In Exodus 16, when they started to receive manna, let's read verses 4 and 5 in Exodus 16. Exodus 16 and verses 4 and 5. Let's see. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them, whether they'll walk in my law or not. It shall be on the sixth day that they prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." So when the manna started for Israel, God used the seven-day week to illustrate the fact 7 days' work is to be done, and then Israel were to gather twice as much on the sixth day versus the rest of the days. And we can see where that's going. God was again testing them to see if they would walk in his laws or not to prepare for the seventh day. So let's read a little bit further in verses 23 through 26. Exodus 16, we'll keep reading in verse 23. "Now he said to them, 'This is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, boil what you will boil, lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning.' So they laid it up till morning as Moses commanded," verse 24, "and it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it." Verse 25, "So Moses said, 'Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it, or manna, in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day of the Sabbath there will be none. Well, just think about Israel right now. It was possible that this was the first time some in that mixed group of Israel were hearing about the Sabbath or were learning about the Sabbath. That's possible. Can't say for sure. It's not too important. What's more important is that this continues that sanctification of the Sabbath day that God started at creation. They were to gather twice the amount on the sixth day, and the Sabbath again referred to as rest, holy to God. They were taught to bake and boil on the sixth day, and nothing would spoil into the seventh day rest. They had that food to eat on the seventh day. God made it, too, so that manna didn't even appear on the seventh day. They couldn't gather it even if they wanted to. Now, this was a very unique case where God is providing them food directly, giving them food to harvest. But it clearly shows God was teaching preparation for the Sabbath. Let's keep reading a little bit more in verses 27 through 29. Exodus 16, 27 through 29. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day." See, even after being commanded to observe the Sabbath, some people went out to gather manna on the Sabbath, either forgetting or not being mindful. And God clarifies, he gave man the Sabbath. He gives them more in the days before so that they don't have to gather and cook on the seventh day. They had to prepare. Now, yes, he was commanding Israel right now to rest. Israel, not the whole world. But from the beginning, this was intended for all mankind, as what we're going to see in the message. He chose Israel as his nation, using manna to help teach them about the Sabbath day. So let's pull out a lesson or takeaway from this first section on how to properly observe the Sabbath. Some of this will be very much known by everyone, but I want to make a disclaimer first. The lessons that we'll be covering today, the takeaways about how to observe the Sabbath, they will be principles that we see in Scripture. Some applications of Sabbath observance are not prescriptive. So some of Sabbath observance can be a personal conscience issue. But other principles are very, very clear. So please keep that in mind as I go through some of these. Now, plus, there are also a million applications of the Sabbath that we're not going to cover today. But these basic principles can help us. The children of Israel here, through their history, when keeping God's laws, they would make sure that preparations were made prior to the Sabbath. Now, here with the manna, which was a very unique case, God could ask them to practice extra preparation before the Sabbath. The principle that we see here is do not do the lion's share of food gather and food prep on the Sabbath. So we don't do our weekly grocery shopping on the Sabbath. We all know that. That's clear. But I cook breakfast for my family on Sunday. On Saturday. God's rule with manna for Israel doesn't apply to requiring us to cook all of Saturday's food ahead of time. He gave them a specific teaching situation that he's providing that manna to illustrate a principle. So if we would misapply that principle, you know, should I cook the eggs on Friday and then leave it out all day? No, that would be tempting God that it would still be good Saturday morning. But that being said, there's still a principle that we can take out from these scriptures, and that is, can we minimize the heavy purchasing, for sure, but also the heavy cooking that we do on the Sabbath? Are we able to minimize that? Can we schedule the larger meal prep work ahead of time? Perhaps. It's not prescriptive, but guidance or a principle that we can pull from this. Now, this can apply to so many things, like can we get the dishes done before the Sabbath so we have fewer dishes to wash on the Sabbath? Can we leave some dishes dirty until the Sabbath is over if we don't need them? So even before Sinai, we see God teaching rest as much as possible on the Sabbath day and preparation for rest in those 6 days leading up. Let's go to the actual commandment for the Sabbath in Exodus 20. So then on Mount Sinai, he gave them the Ten Commandments. And let's see the actual Sabbath command in Exodus 20, and we'll read verses 8 through 11. Exodus 20, and we'll read verses 8 through 11. We all know this very well. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the seventh day and hallowed it. Here's the formal command. God codified the law for Israel. 6 days of work, seventh is for rest. No one in Israel, not even animals or servants, should work, or a stranger living with you. He said, remember to keep it holy. We have this responsibility to keep the Sabbath day holy, not make it a run-of-the-mill day. And we know the Jewish people took it to an opposite extreme. All of these prescriptive laws that Jesus later condemned as being tradition and disturbing the actual observance of the Sabbath. There is a level, though, of us not doing our normal work on the Sabbath. Clear requirement from God. Like, and think about the appearance, too. Would it have mattered if that car financing guy observed the Sabbath but was still there at work? Or I never knew that he didn't work on the Sabbath. Would it matter that he observed it but still worked? Sure, there's a huge difference there. The sign of not working on the Sabbath is a big one. Let's go to Exodus 31 for a little bit more. Here we're going to start seeing how the Sabbath is a sign and part of our covenant. Exodus 31, and we'll read verses 16 and 17. Exodus 31, verses 16 and 17. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days, God made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh, he rested and was refreshed. God is making it clear that the Sabbath was meant to be kept forever as a perpetual covenant. Yes, God was commanding Israel to do it, his chosen nation at the time, but we know Israel was this model nation and will be a model nation again in the kingdom. Just because God made this physical nation's law here does not minimize the fact that the Sabbath was intended for everyone, all of mankind. And, you know, we know spiritual Israel was created after Jesus' sacrifice and the start of the church. We know this Sabbath sign applies to the spiritual children of Israel forever. Again, he's referring to creation, the 6 days of creation, the seventh being a rest. That's the sign of God's people. Just as the church can be tracked by practicing Sabbatarians, this Sabbath is this identifying sign to God and man for followers of God. Now, we're here today at a convocation, so we know one of the big parts of Sabbath observance is attending holy convocation, such as today. But we don't have time to discuss that element of Sabbath observance. We won't turn to Leviticus 23, but that's where the feasts are listed. And the first three verses list the Sabbath with the feasts of God. the seventh day. Every week is a Sabbath of solemn rest, it says, a holy convocation, which is why we're here. So we gather as the people of God in a convocation in God's presence here. But then again in Leviticus 23, it repeats, no work on it. It's the Sabbath of God in all your dwellings. It keeps going back to the command of no work being done. Not us, like the commandment says, not our children or our servants or our livestock, nor the stranger in our gates. Let's go to Nehemiah 13 for more examples and for more lessons we can pull about the Sabbath. Nehemiah 13, this is after Israel had returned to Jerusalem after the captivity. Nehemiah 13. Nehemiah 13, and we'll start in verse 15. This was a situation that came up, possibly some complacency or apathy on the part of some in Israel. Nehemiah 13 and verse 15. Now, there's kind of a sharp rebuke here. Nehemiah 13 and verse 15. In those days, I saw people in Judah treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in sheaves and loading donkeys with wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them about the day on which they were selling provisions. Now drop to verse 17. Verse 17. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said to them, what evil thing is this that you do by which you profane the Sabbath? Here in Nehemiah, we get a taste of not being careful to keep God's Sabbath holy. God's people were treading grapes on the Sabbath, bringing in their harvests, loading donkey with burdens, bringing to Jerusalem for sale. He was warning them, this is the Sabbath. Now, this is one clear example of profaning the Sabbath. To profane the Sabbath is not to keep it holy, or rather to treat as disrespectfully, or to treat as common. To work was really to treat the Sabbath common. Now, maybe it was just their servants that worked, or maybe just their animals, but that's still profaning the Sabbath. And we know the strangers were trying to sell in Jerusalem on the Sabbath in the next verses. Also wrong for us to be buying there. So let's take these general principles from Exodus 20 and Nehemiah 13 here. How we keep the Sabbath. Again, the disclaimer, we can't touch on every situation. Principles here help to guide our decisions. Some will be conscious issues and some will be clear. We don't work our normal jobs today. Those of us who run businesses and have employees, we would shut down our businesses on Saturday. We don't mow our lawns on Saturday. We don't do car repairs on Saturday. We don't harvest our crops. We don't sell any of our goods today. We don't paint our homes or do maintenance projects, and we don't hunt. These are things that we all know. I wrote down preaching to the choir here. Sometimes it has to go deeper. We try not to pick employment that fights us on Sabbath work, like the military for sure. We may give up a job if they require us to lose covenant with God. But is there needed work? If we have pets or livestock, just as we do with our own family and all living things, we feed them clearly. We give them daily needs. But we try to avoid, major work even related to our own livestock today, if we have livestock. other examples, ministers today, Mr. Myers, work today, and yet keep it holy. And think of the priests in the Old Testament in temple work, keeping the Sabbath holy. I mean, Jesus clarifies that himself in the New Testament, that they are still keeping the Sabbath holy. Now, one of the huge deceptions in the world is how few know about the Sabbath or keep the Sabbath, even though it's clearly in here. The world and Satan relegate this to a Jewish-only observance, and only in the Old Testament, somehow obliterated by Jesus. But even after Jesus, after Pentecost, in Acts, the church continued to observe the Sabbath. This is why keeping the Sabbath is such a powerful sign, like that financing guy to me. It's such a treasure to find, a rare thing as keeping the Sabbath. And on the topic of the Sabbath day and observing it properly, Jesus made several clear statements that we feel everyone should know about. I mean, this wouldn't be the case if he wanted the Sabbath to stop being observed as they tried in the past. So as we discuss more of the Sabbath principles and guidance for us, let's notice some of Jesus' words. Let's go to Luke 13. Now, Jesus often healed on the Sabbath day, angering the Jews because of how extreme those traditions were. He often corrected the Pharisees and scribes, saying he was the Lord of the Sabbath and that their tradition conflicted with proper observance of the Sabbath. He wasn't saying that it shouldn't be kept, that the Sabbath shouldn't be kept, but how should the Sabbath be kept? Let's look at Luke 13 for some principles about the Sabbath from Jesus himself. Luke 13, and we'll read verses 10 and 11. Luke 13, verses 10 and 11. Now, he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. Right there, Jesus is teaching on the Sabbath. Verse 11, and behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bent over and could no way raise herself. Now, we'll summarize a little bit. Teaching on the Sabbath here, Jesus then heals this woman. And then the ruler yells, there are 6 days for fasting, not the Sabbath, is what he says. Now look at Jesus' response in verse 15. Luke 13, verse 15. The Lord then answered him and said, hypocrite, does not each of you on the Sabbath loose his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? Verse 16, so ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, think of it, for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath. Now, hop briefly, jump over to Luke 14 and verse 5. There's another situation that follows. In Luke 14, verse 5, a man with dropsy who was healed. In Luke 14 and verse 5, let's read one more response from Jesus because he got a similar shutting down then. Luke 14 and verse 5 says, then he answered them, Jesus answered them, saying, which of you, having a donkey or ox that's fallen into a pit, does not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? Helping people in dire circumstances is acceptable, even encouraged by God on the Sabbath. These ox in the ditch things, we give church members rides, we bring them food, we visit them in hospitals, ministers anoint, and so much more. Now, please understand, this does not mean we go and help Habitat for Humanity or volunteer nurse on the Sabbath day. We have the law to keep the Sabbath as the main principle and not do work. And the holy convocation we come to. But the example from Jesus' own words give us the principle we can take. If our neighbor needs emergency help, we help them. If we get into an accident, we can help that other person get medical care. There again are complex situations, and we use these principles to just make good judgments. But we know clearly the Sabbath was vitally important to Jesus. But is there an even deeper meaning to the Sabbath beyond just the law and keeping a rest? Is there an even deeper meaning? Now, each of the yearly holy days has the meaning of the overall plan of God. Apart from just a weekly day that God set apart for rest and no work, today is this foundation of God's plan. Just as God created in 6 days and rested the seventh, there's clues that refer to 6,000 years of man's rule and the coming seventh thousand year period of the millennium when Jesus returns and the plan of God begins, or at least comes to fruition. The best connection for this is in Hebrews 4. It's a connection between the Old Testament commandment and the observance of the Sabbath by Israel, and then the New Testament promise to the spiritual nation of Israel of entering that rest. God did not let Israel enter the promised land, that rest for them, due to their disobedience, but we have a final rest coming. So let's go to Hebrews 4 and read this scripture together. If you'd like to follow along with me, Hebrews 4, and we'll read verses 1 through 2 to start. Hebrews 4, and we'll read verses 1 and 2 to start. Therefore, the writer of Hebrews says, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear, lest any of you or any of us seem to have come short of it. Verse 2, for indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them, referring to Israel, but the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. But now let's drop to verse 4. This is kind of a difficult section of scripture, but let's drop to verse 4. Hebrews 4, 4. For he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. Verse 5. And again in this place, he says, they shall not enter my rest. We're trying to make the connection between ancient Israel and us today. Now let's read verses 8 through 11. Hebrews 4, verses 8 through 11. For if Joshua had given them rest, Israel, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. In Hebrews 4 and verse 9. Now the rest there is sabbatismos, the Greek word sabbatismos. That sounds familiar to Sabbath, really. Verse 10. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. Verse 11, let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. And we know Israel was not able to enter the rest of the promised land because of disobedience. Now that generation passed, and the writer of Hebrews is connecting that to the seventh day and the Sabbath from the start, picturing this rest for man. The duality here shows the promised land for Israel was like the coming kingdom, that final rest, and it's like our change then at Christ's return. And today, the word received by us can profit us more than it did Israel because it's mixed with faith now that we have God's Spirit. So for us, there remains a rest for spiritual Israel. And that Greek word was sabbatismos. The rest is keeping the Sabbath, pointing future to the kingdom. So we're diligent, we're all diligent to enter that rest. When we cease from all of our works and receive our spirit body in God's family, and we avoid the disobedience of failing to keep the Sabbath, that sign of our covenant. Now, over the course of this message, we've discussed ways to keep the Sabbath. We've seen how we're aiming to keep it holy and make judgment calls as to what is keeping the Sabbath and what is profaning. It's not always clear. Like, do we just clear our heads on the Sabbath day? Yeah, sure. But for how long? Do we sleep a lot more on the Sabbath? Well, yes. And Maybe not. Our Sabbath observance in physical terms, not working, that more visible sign, it's easier to accomplish that. But then the spiritual observance of the Sabbath, this is where our conscience and judgments come even more into it. Now, we've covered a lot of don't do's on the Sabbath, like working. But what are we supposed to do on the Sabbath? What mindset should we have on the Sabbath? And our best guidance on a spiritual conscience level for keeping the Sabbath covenant today is in Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58. This is, for me, a very good guidance on our mindset for the Sabbath. Isaiah 58, and we'll read verses 13 and 14. Here's some more spiritual guidance for our mindset on the Sabbath and then what we do with our time. Isaiah 58 and verses 13 and 14. If you turn your foot from the Sabbath, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, now I found that somewhat confusing. The NIV clears it up. If you keep your foot from breaking the Sabbath, rather, if you keep your foot from breaking the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. So the final principles and lessons that how to keep the Sabbath holy that we'll cover today is from this section, what to do. In general, we aren't to do our own pleasures on the Sabbath. Things clearly that we selfishly want to do for ourselves. And that's different for every single person. And we often in the church, we don't often watch movies on the Sabbath. Or typical entertainment. There's some who watch nature videos or get outdoors, though in everything, judgment is needed. Articles from Life, Hope, and Truth list things such as spending extra time in study and prayer and even thinking, meditation. Spending time with family, though we can add in restful activities, not playing sports. Enjoying relaxing time in God's creation, not like real hiking up a mountain. Fellowshipping and visiting the sick or elderly, listening to peaceful music, special meals. Again, many of these items become judgments on a conscience level. We use these guidance and principles in Scripture to help us better keep it to please God. And we refrain from judging others, especially when some people choose some ways to observe the Sabbath and others choose other ways. Now, we don't intend by that some could actually rationalize true Sabbath breaking in their conscience. But there is room within the spiritual commandment for our minds to approach Sabbath time differently between us and God. Or just think how we would appear to the world if we refrained from working on the Sabbath but then went to a movie theater. That sign between us and God that's visible to the world, it could appear empty. So one thing we always do is remember that sign of God's people that we have on our heads in the world. So in conclusion, as we wrap up the message, and kind of to reiterate Isaiah 58, apart from just not our normal work, we do things that honor God on the Sabbath. Learning about the truth. We don't seek out our own pleasures. Honoring God and learning about God can be pleasure. But that's completely different from seeking out our own pleasures. There's one pleasure aimed at us, and then there's one at God. So if we can honor God and not do our own things, yet still find the Sabbath a delight. That is true Sabbath observance. This weekly gift of the Sabbath we've been given, let's remember its depth of meaning and always keep it.